Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Eunice Wanjiru. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. Thank you to all of you who have joined.
That's right, indeed, Eunice. Coming up on the program, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has begun a three-day trip to Africa for talks on containing illegal migration, starting with Senegal. DW's Emmanuel Lande in Dakar tells us about Merkel's trip.
Well, she's only going to be in Dakar for about 48 hours, but during that time, she's expected to attend a forum between Senegalese authorities and the large delegation of German investors that's accompanying her.
And Germany's Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, has promised Zimbabwe support in order for it to revive its economy.
We have suggested and agreed on setting up a joint commission in which we want to discuss about what steps to take to promote economic development and take your country forward in the course of next year. Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, let's listen to other stories in brief from around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. Five Kenyan soldiers have been killed after their vehicle struck a roadside bomb in the coastal city of Lamu. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack that also left another 10 soldiers injured. There have been several attacks in Kenya since 2011 after the government sent its troops across the border into Somalia to fight Al-Shabaab militants. The German government has handed back to Namibia the remains of its people killed during the colonial era more than 100 years ago. A Namibian government delegation received the skulls and bones at a church service in the capital, Berlin. Gunther Nocker, Germany's commissioner to Africa, was among those involved in the process.
We are, of course, holding reconciliation talks with Namibia right now. We're trying to formulate what happened 100 years ago or more so that we, as Europeans, can apologize for the terrible things there and take responsibility so that our future is not because we talk about the past, but what we can do together now.
Meanwhile, German Chancellor Angela Merkel is in Senegal on the first leg of a three-day trip to Africa for talks on strengthening economic development and containing illegal migration. Merkel is scheduled to meet with Senegalese President Macky Sall in Dakar, followed by meetings with the leaders of civil society groups. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. British Prime Minister Theresa May and his Nigerian counterpart Muhammadu Buhari have signed a security and defense partnership in an effort to fight Boko Haram militants. While in the capital Abuja, May also announced that Britain will provide more equipment and training to the Nigerian soldiers.
I think it's important that we in Nigeria have shared security threats that we need to cooperate on and working against, be that issues like Boko Haram or indeed human trafficking. We recognise the issue of human rights. I have raised that today with the president here in Nigeria. He has set up a committee of inquiry to look into these issues, and I welcome that.
Tomorrow on Thursday, the British Prime Minister heads to Kenya, the last stop of her trip, where she will meet President Uhuru Kenyatta and also meet British soldiers supporting Kenya in the fight against Al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. Russian President Vladimir Putin has suggested softening a deeply unpopular pension reform by lowering the state pension age to 60 for women instead of 63 as earlier proposed. But the pension age for men would still be raised to 65. The draft pension reforms have sparked protests across Russia and dented Putin's popularity. For more news and information, head on our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyinge.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I can see Evangelist Carl, who's in Cameroon. Terence Padfollet, who's also in Cameroon. Yeah, stay there, and of course we acknowledge your comments. Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has begun a three-day trip to Africa for talks on containing illegal migration. Merkel is in Senegal at the moment and will travel next to Ghana and Nigeria.
Now, the Chancellor said in advance of her departure that her trip will include talks on creating job opportunities in three countries in order to prevent them from attempting to migrate to Europe. DW's Emmanuel Londe has been telling me what is expected from her trip to Senegal.
Well, she's only going to be in Dakar for about 48 hours, but during that time, she's expected to attend a forum between Senegalese authorities and the large delegation of German investors that's accompanying her. The forum will be chaired by Senegalese Prime Minister Mohamed Boun Diagne. Overall, efforts to boost economic ties and limit irregular migration to Europe are expected to dominate her agenda. By finding ways to prevent irregular migrants from starting their journeys, and that's by providing more development aid for their countries. Already in January this year, Germany opened a Centre for Jobs, Migration and Reintegration in Dakar that offers services for returning migrants. Local people can go there as well and get information on employment opportunities that they've got here in their home country, especially within the projects of Germany's development cooperation.
So how important a partner is Germany to Senegal's development?
Germany is a huge partner for Senegal since its independence in 1960. Germany has injected about 800 million euros in the country, according to the German embassy here in Senegal. And in 2006, Berlin also cancelled Senegal's bilateral debts of nearly 120 million euros. Senegal is one of the partner countries of the Compact with Africa initiative that was launched last year under the German G20 presidency that promotes private investment in Africa, including in infrastructure. So today, the priority for Germany and Senegal is investments in renewable energies. That's because the availability of energy is one of the main obstacles of Senegal's development. Senegal's hugely dependent on imported fossil fuels, but wants to make more use of solar and wind energy. And that's where Germany's knowledge and experience in the field is highly important for Senegal. Their cooperation now is based on increasing access to energy in rural areas and to make the global energy supply safer, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly.
And what's the history of trade between the two countries?
Well, Senegal imports more than it exports to Germany. For example, in 2015, Senegal imports added up to around 100 million euros, while exports were only around 14 million euros. Senegalese exports to Germany include metals like zircon and gold, as well as fruits and beans like tomatoes and mangoes and fish meal. Meanwhile, Senegal imports vegetable oils, cars, and other transport vehicles and construction machinery from Germany. Overall, it's really an important trip for both countries.
I was speaking to Emmanuel Londe, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel is expected to leave Dakar Thursday morning to head to Accra.
And we asked you whether you think African leaders will bargain smartly with the German Chancellor. And of course, you are quick always to get back to us. Shaib Idris says most African leaders are selfish and self-centered. They are only concerned about today, while tomorrow is forgotten.
And Kwame Kume Bruce is saying, yes, they should bargain smartly. But do we have any smart African leaders? The question.
Similar to what Nze Frederick says, he thinks those representing Africa in these meetings do not know anything. They're just contented with their positions.
Well, Thank you for your comments. Keep them coming.
Now, in a related development, Germany's Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, who is currently on a visit in Zimbabwe, has urged the country's leadership to ensure that human rights are respected following events that happened during the elections that saw Emmerson Mnangagwa elected as president.
Müller said Germany and other European states hopes that post-election Zimbabwe will be stable and start on an economic recovery. Mnangagwa faces the mammoth task of rebuilding a worsening economy and uniting a nation divided by a vote that many hoped would deliver change. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga sent this report.
Gerd Müller, the German Minister of Economic Cooperation and Development, becomes the most senior official from the EU's largest economy to visit Zimbabwe after the country's disputed presidential election on July 30th this year that was won by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Speaking through an interpreter, Müller said he hoped that President Mnangagwa's government would respect rights of the opposition and uphold court decisions, which would be a departure from the regime of Robert Mugabe.
Deutschland und Europa ist interessiert an
Germany and Europe have great interest in this region and in this country,
That is why we'll support the government of Zimbabwe, especially to implement measures that will improve the situation for people of Zimbabwe. We want to do something to improve investment. We have suggested and agreed on setting up a joint commission in which we want to discuss about what steps to take to promote economic development and take your country forward in the course of next year.
Patrick Chinamasa, Zimbabwe's Minister of Finance, described Mueller's visit as very fruitful and said Harare, Berlin, good days are set to resume in the near future.
Germany used to be the major source of our lines of credit until the sanctions were imposed. And this is a matter we also have discussed with a view to seeing that we can revisit the issue. A joint commission between the Federal Republic of Germany and Zimbabwe. And the sooner it meets, the happier Zimbabwe will be. We need to explore the areas of cooperation in the many areas that we have discussed. This is something that we are all going to pursue very vigorously. All in all, I'm very happy with the first step that Germany has taken to build bridges between our respective countries.
Relations between Zimbabwe and Germany collapsed in 2002 when the European Union and most Western countries slapped the leadership of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party with smart sanctions following reports of election rigging and human rights abuses. President Mnangagwa has promised to smoothen the strained relations with the West, and in turn he hopes credit lines open.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare.
Now, Eunice, to put all that into context, you know, Germany's increasing interest in Africa. I spoke to Brian Sunguru Wanyama, a political analyst in Kenya. Let's take a listen and come back with the comments from our listeners.
The best approach will be to get back to the source and see if jobs can be created, businesses set up, employment created for these young men and women so that they don't risk crossing the seas to go to Europe, as it were, to look for greener pastures. And I think that for a long time, Germany has been an acquired diplomatic partner of African countries. They have not come out clearly to support various development projects, which could boost economic development in a way that really generates jobs here in Africa. So I think it's at a very opportune time that we have the Chancellor Angela Merkel coming to Africa, and she appears to be carrying some good goodies for the African countries. We hope that it's going to be actualized.
You just mentioned that Germany has been a good and great partner for African countries like Nigeria and Ghana. And of course, these countries have been receiving huge loans and grants from monetary institutions and other European countries, or developed countries.
Yes.
But
yes,
the majority of their people can barely make ends meet. Why is this?
I think one of the main key factors is accountability, that the German government has not put these African recipients of aid, donor aid from Germany, to accountability. The second bit is about priorities. What are the priorities for African countries today? And the third area aspect is to do with corruption. It goes without saying that African countries are not doing very well on the corruption index.
I was speaking to Brian Sunguru Wanyama, a political analyst based in Nairobi, Kenya.
And we apologize for the sound quality. Now, Isaac, there have been comments that are coming in here on this visit. Joram Nomso, Celestin, is saying, I don't understand why these Europeans and Chinese are touring Africa. Just now, Theresa May visited Nigeria after South Africa. There must be something fishy about their visit.
Exactly. Similar comment from Jacob Waweru, I think he's in Nairobi. You know, he says, this is the scramble for Africa, party two, which is also a similar comment from McDonald's Nyamtenya, who says this is modern colonization, or rather Ohams Nameka, who says, what is this recent invasion of Africa by these Western leaders?
Yeah, talking about scramble, also Victor Emejuru is saying Africa is the new frontier, an untapped market. The scramble is about their interest.
And Kaspar Mbinda from Botswana says, we do appreciate the gesture made by Germany. Promises have been made by the Zimbabwean president. Now it's time to act on those promises.
One last comment here from NVTP saying, how long will African nations keep depending on Western nations? A good question.
Yeah, many thanks for that contribution. You know, keep up the debate flowing on our Facebook page, as usual, DW Africa. And also invite your friends to like and share the program.
This is Africa Link coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We appreciate the fact that you are engaging in a debate on our Facebook page. We'll come back to you on that a little later on the program.
Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing how a family court in Ghana decided to split a home into two after a man divorced her first wife and chased her out of their marital home.
We were married, and one day he went and found another woman. When I first knew of her, I asked him about it, but he didn't respond.
Yes, Eunice, you just heard that from a woman who was chased out from her marital home after contributing, you know, big time and staying in a marriage for 15 years. I think, in my own opinion, the court try to do to serve justice, isn't
definitely,
it?
Definitely, definitely.
We'll come back to that story in our usual segment, which is on the spot. But first, Kenya's High Court has temporarily stopped criminal proceedings against the Deputy Supreme Court Justice, or the Deputy Chief Justice, who was arrested a day earlier and charged on suspicion of corruption, failure to pay taxes, and improper dealings with a local bank. The detention of the Deputy Chief Justice is the highest profile case since a series of corruption-related arrests began several months ago.
The government launched a new anti-graft push this year, and criminal charges have been leveled against dozens of civil servants and business people. DW's Andrew Wasike has been out in the streets to find out people's reactions on this.
The fight against corruption has been top of the headlines in recent days, with Nurdin Mohamed Haji, the director of public prosecutions, being the talk of the town for carrying out arrests on both civil servants and private citizens. His latest catch is the Deputy Chief Justice, Philomena Mwilu, who was this week charged with abuse of her office for personal gain, undermining public integrity in the judiciary. Billions of taxpayers' money have vanished from government coffers without a trace, but President Uhuru Kenyatta has vowed to crack the whip hard, regardless of the status of the suspects. So, some say the charges are meant to settle political scores, but many ordinary Kenyans think it's time to lock away the corrupt.
Let them be jailed. From ministers to anyone who is corrupt, I want them jailed. If someone is corrupt, then let the law take its course. Even if it is the Deputy Chief Justice, we don't care that she is a high-ranking judicial officer. If we start being lenient, that is where we will go wrong in our war on corruption.
But for 38-year-old Paul Njoroge, a businessman, he says he's fed up with the fake war on corruption.
I don't consider this as important that the Deputy Chief Justice was arrested. Corrupt people in Kenya, especially high-ranking officials, are always released from jail. I don't think there is anything important that they're doing. I feel that they're just wasting time. Actions speak louder than words, and here we just have words. I'm here to see a concrete plan or steps that the government has taken to fight corruption head on. It has just been the normal games we are used to.
Despite the fact that she was released on bail, the Deputy Chief Justice Mwilu will return to court on the 9th of October after her lawyers raised constitutional concerns of her case. Lawyer Charles Kanjama talks on the implications of the arrest of Mwilu.
I think it would be very important for Kenyans to allow the process to run its course, also to test whether indeed this prosecution is being brought fairly against the Deputy Chief Justice. I believe that the mere fact that charges have been brought does not even stop her from going on with her duties.
It should be recalled that Mwilu was appointed to the Supreme Court in 2016 and shot into the limelight for her role in annulling Uhuru Kenyatta's first poll win. Since then, Kenyatta promised to fix the judiciary, but only time can tell whether the charges against Philomena Mwilu are politically motivated or indeed a crackdown on corrupt civil servants.
Andrew Wasike.
And we have some of your comments on this particular story. Steve Njoki Mulwa says, in African governance, when you follow the right rules against the leader, he turns around and fabricates corruption charges on you. These are elements that the dormant African Union was supposed to be scrutinizing.
And more Chroma is saying, this is somehow a political witch hunt. Even though nobody will ever, in their right mind, support the act of corruption. In this day, Africa, when you saw relationships between you and the ruling establishment, they will get at you anyhow.
Anyway, this is the story that our correspondents on the ground in Nairobi and Rasike will keep monitoring whenever it develops, and then we'll report on it whenever we can. Don't go away. We still have much more to come in you, for you in store.
On the spot.
Now, a court in Tamale, that is in northern Ghana, has divided a six-bedroom self-contained house for a divorced couple. The man takes four rooms and the woman takes two rooms. The case is that the couple, after 15 years of marriage, worked and built the house together, but the man later married another woman and drove the other woman away. Ines.
Now, her story mirrors widely amongst most women in Ghana who support their husbands. And when the marriage ends, the woman doesn't benefit. This contravenes the constitution, which says that in case of a divorce, couples have to divide property equitably. Maxwell Suk reports.
The magistrate court ruled that the plaintiff, Abina Aninya, was entitled to two bedrooms out of the six-bedroom house, whilst the defendant, Isahaku Amua, would take the remaining four rooms. Aninya, the plaintiff, spoke to DW moments after the judgment was passed.
We were married, and one day he went and found another woman. When I first knew of her, I asked him about it, but he didn't respond. On the wedding day, I confronted him. Then he and his brothers drove me out of the house. I contributed sand, water, and carried bricks to build that house.
Ghana's spousal bill upholds that property jointly acquired by couples should be distributed equitably upon the dissolution of the marriage. Aninya's lawyer, Stephen Azantulo, says it was an infringement on her rights. He now wants more women to come forward and demand their entitlements.
If all women are made aware of the fact that once they contribute towards the building of the house or towards the acquisition of any property, they can't just be thrown away, or they cannot be deprived of the enjoyment of that property. There is a forum for them to come and ventilate their rights.
Abina Aninya became homeless for months, sleeping at car parks until she found an apartment to rent. Her case is widespread in Ghana, and most women see the court ruling as welcoming. I spoke to some of them.
To me, it's fair. Looking at a lady that you think maybe you love the person, you have wasted your time, your money, you have built her something to support the family, and at the end, they'll get up and be like, no, you don't deserve it. It's not the best way, you understand? It's high time Ghanaians have to get up and know that we, the ladies, we are important.
For me, if we are going to quantify in terms of the hourly rate, that means that women, even whether it is you who has built the house or not, I don't think that you should be entitled to the whole house. It has to be quantified.
I am in front of the disputed house located at Sanarugu near Tamale, and children are happily playing. Part of the house has not been completed yet. Women's rights champions like Hafsat Sey Sumane, who works with NOSAC, one of the organizations advancing women and girls' empowerment in the northern region, says the issue is widespread and cultural.
Find many women even contributing more than the men. But when it comes to both the woman's family and the man's family don't support the woman, mostly. And I think that this is as a result of our cultural practices that we have here. Otherwise, it makes logic that if you both contribute, then you have to share it equally.
A woman rights activist ending that report by Maxwell Suk. Now, Isaac, do you think the other way around it would work? Like, if it is the man now going and saying the woman is taking everything?
Well, in the first place, I don't think, you know, the man was right to chase away the woman, because they toiled together for 15 years. And then Also, the court rules that the man takes 4 bedrooms and the first woman takes 2. Partly justice was seen to be done. But again, at least since the constitution says they have to divide the property equally, they should have taken 3 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms. Or the man goes away, you know.
Yeah, I think there also the judge should have maybe divided it equally, like half-half and not like that. But now you're not answering my question.
Yes.
If it was the man now going to court because the woman has chased him out, does that even happen?
In the African setting, no. But in Europe, it does so happen, you know.
Well,
especially in countries like Norway, where actually the men have decided to go into business because the women are too powerful, you know. You know that?
Yes, you're right. we just hope that people can stay together and share everything that they have together.
Yeah, not the women chasing away the men like you suggest, or the men chasing out the women out of the marital home, isn't it?
You're right.
We still have much more to come. Stay there.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, about half of Tanzania's population live below the poverty line. Many are unable to access all of the basic needs, including energy services. Tamimu Kifungu is a young innovator who wants to solve Tanzania's energy problem with renewables.
He is part of a group of self-taught engineers that are designing windmills, generating electricity and pumping water. Sela Oneko presents this report by Thuku Kariuki.
Tamimu Kifungu is a man with a mission. The engineer from Tanzania has already built 10 wind generators with his partners. 2 years ago, they founded the company Tim Success. At the beginning, they worked for other companies, but they soon realized that they could build windmills themselves. Most of the company's staff come from remote regions in Tanzania. There, electricity and water are hard to come by. Not even a third of Tanzanians have access to electrical power. Kifungu wanted to provide solutions.
Sisi, baada kutana na changamoto ya uchimbaji wa visima.
As young people in our villages, we face the challenge of drilling and getting water out of the boreholes. Especially pumping water out of it was the main challenge. We thought of finding an alternative way of solving the problem in the area. We started thinking of how the problem could come to an end.
When a wind turbine needs to be repaired, the company owners fix it themselves. A small windmill costs between 3,500 and 5,500 euros. More than half of the windmills sold run water pumps as well as produce electricity. Kifungu points to a windmill.
This is a windmill-driven water pump project. The system uses wind power to pump water from the source, be it a river, a lake, or a borehole. This one is for a borehole, and it is used to pump water to households.
Life for the farmers here has gotten easier. Previously, Nasibu Omari had to fetch water far away in the wetlands. Now, thanks to the pump, the water flows all the way directly to the farm. As long as the wind is blowing, there's plenty of water, and Omari has seen the benefits.
This project has been on for a year and a half. We have seen changes in running our businesses because our activities need a lot of water, and now we have plenty.
The farmer raises chickens and grows vegetables. He's had the windmill for 1.5 years now. It makes his work easier and allows him to make important investments. With the extra water, he can plant more crops and purchase more animals. Back at the company's headquarters in Dar es Salaam, Tamimu Kifungu works with a team of 20 partners. None had ever worked in the field before, and only 4 of them are trained engineers. They all learned how to build wind generators on the job, using YouTube tutorials, when they started. Later, they had the idea of connecting them to water pumps, which turned out to be their most important innovation to date. The government has been planning a major wind park for years, but it is a long way away from being finished. Meanwhile, local solutions like Tamimu Kifungu's are providing water and electricity, at least to some villages.
A report by Thuku Kariuki.
Now, in other news, today would have been Michael Jackson's 60th birthday, the king of pop. And in Detroit, fans of Aretha Franklin have been paying their tributes to her. Now, Eunice, And a cappella, please, of Aretha's song, You Make Me Feel Like...
You make me feel like a natural woman.
Wow, that's, I like that. Respect. Yeah, and that was Eunice Wanjiru paying tribute as well to Aretha Franklin in her song, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
Thank you for listening to Africa Link.
Yes, on behalf of the crew behind there and the rest of the team at Africa Link, as usual, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
Bye for now.